Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's just gone 9 minutes past 10. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and you are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. We're joined in studio today by Professor Lucille Bloomberg, infectious disease specialist, SA Malaria Advisory Group, and honorary professor at the University of Pretoria. We're going to be chatting about flu vaccines. What are the common flu vaccines on offer? What are the benefits of taking vaccines before the winter season? What are the side effects of flu vaccines? And is there any information on the new flu strain? And we'll be finishing off with, besides flu vaccines, how can a person protect themselves from flu? And we'll be finishing off the day by chatting to Kathy Kaler in studio about the Ensure Gold that she has been taking.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to you to manage your health risks. Whether you have your regular wellness checkups, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Dis-Chem, better health starts here. And we are very grateful to be joined in studio by Professor Lucille Bloomberg, infectious disease specialist, SA Malaria Advisory Group, and honorary professor at the University of Pretoria. Professor, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Terrific time to discuss flu. We're in the middle of the season.
Absolutely. And I think we are having a rather unusually warm end to May, so if that sort of is having any effect on the intensity of the flu that we're going to be facing. So what are some of the common flu vaccines that are on offer to customers?
So the country will import a couple of flu vaccines from different manufacturers. The supply may vary from year to year, but generally, they will all be made to a certain formula that will hopefully protect us against the flu strains that will circulate during the season. Remember, these are prepared in advance. What is chosen is based on a number of factors, including what circulated at the end of the last year in the Southern Hemisphere and perhaps what the Northern Hemisphere experienced. So, you know, there is some planning, and every year, vaccine is a little different to try and match the strains that may circulate.
In essence, what is a flu vaccine?
Well, it's all vaccines are a little different. They may be components of the virus. For the flu vaccine, there is no live virus in the vaccine. I think I mentioned that because people say, well, I got the flu vaccine and then I got flu. Well, that can't happen. There's no live virus. So it's generally a component of the flu virus, but it cannot cause flu. There's no live active virus in the vaccine.
Right. And what is the intention of the flu vaccine?
It's to prevent infection or to reduce the severity. Right. And how successful it will depend on if you do it in time. It takes 10 to 14 days to be effective. We're already well into the flu season. Some people might have missed the boat if they only vaccinate now, but let's not discourage them from doing it. Never too late. It will depend on what flu strains are circulating and whether that prediction for the formula has been correct. And, you know, generally they do match.
Right.
And sometimes you get a few surprises, but it will depend on that. And then obviously the person, perhaps a little less effective in older people, but can certainly still reduce the severity.
Okay, right. You spoke earlier about sort of the Southern Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere. When the Northern Hemisphere is experiencing winter ahead of us, are we usually behind the curve in the flus that come out?
I think they're a little bit behind, so okay. We can inform maybe what they're happening. We're a little ahead of them. It's always a difficult one.
Right.
But a lot goes into considering what the formulation should be. And there are flu monitoring centers in South Africa. We have an excellent one at the National Institute for Infectious Disease, National Institute for Communicable Diseases, that has a very big network. Where doctors submit strains and those are used to make some of the decisions. There's a similar program in Australia, New Zealand, and some countries of South America. And then they all sit at the WHO, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of work that goes into selecting the strains for the next season.
Right.
Very carefully thought out.
Have you seen a change in attitude from the public towards vaccines, given the exposure in being brought to the front of the public's attention with COVID?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I think there's, you know, two parts to this, quite diverse. So some will be a little keener to have the vaccine. I think they appreciate the severity of respiratory illness. I think they may understand some of their risk factors and some of the risk factors generally for respiratory illness, for COVID, for influenza, and will be keener to have the vaccine. And then I'm afraid there is an increasing population of anti-vaxxers who perhaps are not vaccinating for many diseases post-COVID. So we're sitting with those two groups. And then I think it's important to remember that during COVID, because people were isolating, they were wearing masks, there was this you know, big COVID outbreak, that flu was actually very little of flu was seen. But it's come back, and it's come back to its almost normal seasonality and intensity.
Right.
And yes, we're in the middle of a busy season.
So,
unexpected, but here it is.
So people who were exposed to COVID and perhaps had quite severe sort of side effects from COVID, should they be more cautious in terms of saying they need to get the vaccine?
Yeah. So influenza can be, it's often mild, although people feel flattened and they have to go to bed for a few days. But in certain risk groups, it can be severe and complicated. And our hospitals are pretty full. ICUs are pretty full with all manner of respiratory illness that we get in winter, including influenza. And influenza in asthmatics, diabetics, those with immune problems, those over 60, 65, pregnant women, can be very severe and complicated. And
right.
We need to remind everybody of the need to protect. Very similar group to those who experienced severe COVID. And if you had severe COVID and your lungs have unfortunately mm-hmm. had some damage, absolutely, you would want to protect yourself against influenza.
Right.
You know.
So, Professor, we have a few questions that have come in from our listeners.
Yes.
So, first one is, morning. Can you explain why people get flu directly after getting the vaccine?
So they don't. I think that's a very common myth, and I'm glad it's been raised. As I explained, you cannot get influenza, the viral infection from the flu virus, after being vaccinated. There is no live virus in the vaccine. Sometimes people experience some muscle pain, sometimes low-grade fever. They feel a bit tired, and they kind of think, well, this is the flu that I normally have. You know, that's some mild side effects of the vaccine, and they will get better. The other thing is if they've missed the boat, if they are incubating flu,
right.
influenza, they've been infected, and then they go along and have the vaccine, and then they become ill because, you know, the timing wasn't correct.
Right.
So they're already infected, and then they attribute it to the vaccine.
Okay.
And I think people should have been vaccinated. April, earlier in April. You know, we're well into the season now. So that is something, you know, I think they might experience, but it's not the vaccine.
The vaccine
is safe with very mild adverse effects, really.
Professor, we're just going to go now to a quick ad break, and we'll be back with you shortly, so stay with us.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Listen out for the Ensure Gold One More in 24 Health feature for expert advice and tips on how you can support your strength and energy, so you can do more of the things that you love most every day. We are chatting to Professor Lucille Bloomberg, infectious disease specialist, SA Malaria Advisory Group, and honorary professor at the university. Professor, we've covered a little bit about the flu vaccine. What are the benefits of taking the vaccine before, and I see you stress this point, before the winter season?
Okay, so it's never too late. You know, you may get some benefit if you're not already infected. So it will reduce the severity in those who are at risk for complications of flu, particularly pneumonia. And in some, it may actually prevent them being infected. So, you know, I think one must remember that influenza is not always a mild illness. Even if it's uncomplicated, you feel pretty awful, and you may need to take time off work. If you are a health worker or living in a house with somebody who's at risk for severe illness, perhaps you don't want to get infected. I think you need to protect yourselves and in that way protect them. But definitely if you're at risk for complications, pregnant women, diabetics, asthmatics, other respiratory illness, any underlying medical problem, it's good to get the vaccine.
So we touched on it briefly earlier, where people were asking, why do we get sick after the vaccine? Something that I'd like to ask is the stress, because I'm not a fan of needles. So is that stress and the anxiety building up to getting the vaccine potentially lowering one's immune system? And then if you are carrying the virus, getting sick. So
no.
That's not a...
No.
Okay.
No, so the vaccine might have inactivated virus. There's no live virus. It may have one of the proteins from the influenza virus, but there is nothing live that can cause flu.
Right.
Yeah. And that needle is really sharp and really small. And with a skilled operator, it's over in seconds.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I know once it's over, it's what was I so worried about? But I think there's tremendous anxiety around the needle. So if we're looking at sort of the effects of the virus, if you could break it down simply, how does the flu vaccine work in preventing the virus?
Well, the vaccine will stimulate your immunity to make generally antibodies against the virus. So when the virus enters, you have preformed antibodies that will stop the virus from replicating, the real virus, not the vaccine one,
right,
and causing harm. Right. So, you know, I think we forget that flu can be a really severe, serious illness in that group of at-risk patients. And if you go to our hospitals now, many of the wards, including the ICUs, are pretty busy with people who've contracted influenza, may predispose them to pneumonia. It may make their underlying condition, their asthma, their diabetes, etc., worse. So, you know, it's not always a benign illness.
Right.
For the rest, you know, if you're not at risk, we may be flattened, feel awful, severe muscle pain, cold shivers. It's an unpleasant illness. So, you know, I think the vaccine absolutely does play a role, but particularly important in those at risk for complications.
Right. We spoke earlier about sort of where you might have a colleague who's ill or feeling ill and not wanting to go to work. What is the advisable thing to do if someone can take time off work, if they are feeling ill? you know, there's a common belief that if you're showing symptoms, then you're no longer contagious. What is the right thing to do if one is starting to get sick and feeling sick and can take time off work?
Yeah, so just to look at the symptoms, a headache, fever, sometimes cough, cold shivers, hot sweats and muscle pain, sometimes a runny nose. You know, that sort of overlaps with many other respiratory illnesses, including COVID. I think if you are experiencing a flu-like illness, I think it's reasonable to take time off work, rest, go home until you're better. That might be 5 or 6 days. It's the same advice that's been around for years.
Yep.
Have something over-the-counter medication to perhaps relieve your symptoms. And then don't forget our grandmother, our Boba's advice. Good soup.
The chicken soup.
Makes a big difference. makes you feel better.
Absolutely.
Gives you nourishment. Lots of fluids.
Right.
And just a reminder, while we're talking about this, young people or people who do a lot of exercise are often reluctant to let go of their program when they have influenza. They absolutely need to. So, you know, influenza can affect many systems, including the heart. You can get a myocarditis. And every now and again, you hear about fit young people who kind of, you know, dropped on the sports field while they were running and they gave a history of flu-like illness. You know, that's what you want to avoid. Rest. Rest.
Professor, that's such a vital point. And it's something that we see often where guys are not feeling well and they don't, as you said, want to miss out on their program, whether they're training for rugby at school or for sports or for whatever, or they're wanting to lose weight. Just if we can cover that a little bit more depth, how important is it and what are the risks of training when you have flu-like symptoms?
So the risks are that you may have a complication of influenza. One of them includes an infection of the heart, so that's a myocarditis.
Right.
And there are well-documented cases of otherwise fit people who get a flu-like illness. They have got a myocarditis. They push themselves a little far because that's the nature of their exercise program. Yeah. And they have an arrhythmia or they just drop.
Right.
I mean, that's terrible. So it's okay to go home, rest, and delay that exercise program. It's the right thing to do. And so, I think schools need to note that very well.
Absolutely. So if you're having any of those symptoms, rather rest and don't go.
Rest.
If we have.
While you are. Can I raise one point?
Please.
Because it's my favorite, you know, my hobby horse. As you know, I'm part of the malaria group. Now, people are going to travel perhaps June, July, during the holidays. They will go to areas where malaria is still circulating. And sometimes, you know, you do get some winter circulation, very little. But you go to countries like Mozambique where it's year-round. And they develop a flu-like illness. These symptoms of malaria overlap with influenza. And I think the important thing is to remember that anyone who's traveled to a malaria area lives in an area where there's malaria and they develop what they call a flu-like illness. Fever, cold shivers, hot sweats must be tested for malaria. Every year we get the odd case of malaria slipping through, not getting managed, patient dying because everybody thought it was flu because it's flu season.
Right.
So that's an important message. The rest one, the chicken soup one, and just think malaria if you've traveled. You know, these are very important messages to get out there.
And that's at any time of the year if you've traveled and you're feeling
it's any free. Time. Look back on people who've died of malaria and they will have a first, second, third diagnosis of COVID, but also flu.
Right.
Yeah. Let's not make that mistake. And patient power, you know, traveled, get flu-like illness, demand a test before you reach for the chicken soup.
I was going to ask, so it is perfectly in the patient's right to say, hey,
yes.
I've traveled, can I have a malaria test?
Yes, okay. Yes, absolutely. Must.
Is that
need to remind people.
Yes, absolutely. What is a malaria test?
So it's a blood test.
Okay.
You can't look at a person and go, oh, they've got malaria. And I think the key thing is that they've traveled to a malaria area and they've got this fever, cold shivers, flu-like illness. They must get an urgent test. So right. I think that's my really important message.
If we could go back and touch on the vaccine and the anti-vaxxers a little bit earlier that we spoke about, where people feel that it's not appropriate and they're almost boycotting all vaccines, can we just touch on the importance of vaccines and why people should be vaccinated, and particularly children? You know,
together with safe water and sanitation, vaccines have had the biggest impact on improving health. And I remember when I worked in the ICU unit some time ago, commonest pediatric admission was measles. And we forget, because we're not seeing lots of cases, that it can be a very severe illness. And we will have outbreaks, and we have had. And there are outbreaks, you know, many countries in the world, because people have let go of vaccines. And, you know, there's diphtheria outbreaks now. We see cases of tetanus. We see lots of cases of whooping cough. And really the most important intervention there. And polio is, you know, something that always concerns us. We don't want it to come back. Vaccines are absolutely critical for protecting your children against what are common and easily preventable through vaccines, childhood illnesses. Yeah.
So, I mean, people effectively looking for the proof of safety and effectiveness of vaccines, they just have to look back over the last 100 years at the general health of the population.
Yeah. And as, you know, biologicals or interventions, they are incredibly well researched and have had, you know, years-long trials and research projects to show their safety. But because you don't see lots of them around now, you think, well, why should my child have? Absolutely every child needs to be protected and part of protecting everyone.
Right.
We're not safe until everyone is protected.
We're not safe until everyone is protected.
Yeah.
Very important point. To touch on one potentially a little bit controversial, if you are going to work and you have a colleague that is coughing and sneezing and sweating and showing symptoms of flu, you know, is it reasonable to sort of distance yourself from from someone who's showing symptoms of being ill? You know, perhaps sitting by a window. What can people do when they're surrounded by people who are showing symptoms?
Well, I guess they might have been vaccinated, which could protect them, particularly if they're at risk.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I think it's, you know, what we did for COVID, a face mask. It is a kind of aerosol spread. So, you know, a cloth mask may not help you. Open windows, good air conditioning from our natural windows.
Right,
natural air conditioning is very good.
Right.
And you might want to suggest that they distance themselves. You know, obviously different work settings have different rules. We need to address those. But if you're at risk, be vaccinated and distance yourself.
And then I suppose... The same would apply for school, really. You know, take the steps that you need to keep yourself safe. Is it advisable, though, to expose yourself once you've been vaccinated? I mean, the story about building up natural immunity and so on? Or do you want to avoid getting sick as often as possible?
I think if you've got risk factors for severe flu, you really do want to avoid infections.
Right.
It's very unpleasant, and complications are very real and can be quite serious, very serious in at-risk persons.
Have we seen that increase over the years with our lifestyle, where there are more at-risk people than there were?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that we measure that exactly, but they certainly have, you know, diabetes, obesity, I think would be risks. A heart disease, underlying cardiac disease, would put you more at risk and also potentially make your cardiac problem a little more severe.
Right.
I think it was during COVID that people became a lot more aware of the risks of infectious diseases if you have underlying risk factors. and the non-communicable epidemic, non-communicable disease, actually epidemic, that we are dealing with.
True. Yeah. And I think it's not a way that you want to find out you have an underlying health risk is exposing it when you have influenza.
Yeah, and we have a few patients who didn't seem to, you know, have apparently risk factors, got severe influenza, then were tested, had sugars tested, and yes, they were diabetic.
They were diabetic.
So I think, you know, there are all sorts of health monitoring things that one can do, and many medical aides and even pharmacies will encourage you to do so.
What would some of those be? If we could touch
Well, diabetes
on.
Is mm. one.
Okay.
Hypertension would be another. Obesity would be a third. Asthma, I think, is a very important risk factor.
Right.
Any immune problem, underlying immune problem, would put you at risk. Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of lifestyle, addressing those, and I think this is a point that we'll go on to a little bit later, but in terms of lifestyle, getting as healthy as possible, what would you advise, you know, managing sugar, managing weight, and so on?
Yeah, healthy diet, right. Reasonable exercise program, good mental state.
Yes.
You know, I think that came out during COVID. Everything in moderation.
Right.
Yeah.
Have we seen, and with smokers, how does this affect them?
Oh, my goodness.
And then so, vaping, if we could touch on that as well. I don't know if there's any evidence on that.
So, yeah, smoking, you know, I think everyone recognizes the risks, and chronic obstructive airways disease and lung damage and any underlying respiratory problem would pose a risk if you now get an infection. Okay. And vaping, well, you know, everybody thinks vaping is completely safe. Well, I think there's enough evidence to show that it's not.
And I'd like to...
I'm not an expert there.
Yeah.
And so, I think I'm going to leave the message there.
There, okay, fair enough.
Don't rest assured that vaping is safe. I'm going to protect you.
All right.
Yeah.
And we're going to go now to an ad break. Professor, we will be back with you after that.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Professor Lucille Bloomberg, infectious disease specialist, SA Malaria Advisory Group, and honorary professor at the University of Pretoria. Professor, I just want to say thank you so much for your time, the incredibly valuable information that you shared, and in such a simple way that a lay person such as myself can understand it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Stay healthy.
Stay healthy. Stay strong. Thank you, Professor. Bye-bye.